Life Audio.
Today on Talk About That, John puts all his memories in the cloud and begs me not to tell him the score of the game. Meanwhile, I perform in front of 16,000 people and hurt myself playing ice hockey. Plus a conversation about toxic hustle culture and finding the delicate balance between self-improvement and contentment. Today's episode is not sponsored by TikTok. You're going to get injured. You may as well record it and make some money. But first, a word from our actual sponsor.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-497-4410. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-497-4410. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-497-4410.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
Another January edition of Talk About That. I'm John here with my colorful co-host, Johnny W.
Okay. I like that.
Are you like the color commentator of this thing?
I don't think of myself as very colorful, but...
Do I do the play-by-play?
Mm-hmm.
And you do the...
Yeah. I would offer the weird, like, non sequitur story that has nothing to do with what you just said. And you'd have to, like, somehow get us back on track. You know?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, like, yeah, it looks like a fumble. They're going to wait for the review. And I go, I like peaches. And then you'd be, you know, you'd have to figure out a way to, like, okay then.
Yeah, that's, yeah. Well, peaches are slippery because they fumble. Yeah. Speaking of,
yeah,
are you following the NFL playoff race?
Of course.
Are you watching, like, every game? You've been on the road a lot, so I
yeah,
know.
But we get, I've got to watch some of each game, and then we have to go do shows.
Yeah.
So it's a bummer. You leave and then you come back and go, oh, then, you know. But we were in Toronto during the Chiefs and Bills game, and we missed most of the second half, and then it was starting to end, and then we were trying to get somewhere. There was a restaurant that was closing, but they were staying open for Nate. I'm on tour with Nate Bergazzi. So they were staying open like an extra hour. And it was going to be just us in there. And I was like, oh, this, what a cool thing. Like, what a neat,
oh yeah,
you know, this little Italian restaurant in Toronto, which known for
yes,
quality Italian food. It's called Uncle Tony's, which is, it's funny to me.
Yeah.
So Uncle Tony's, hey.
Hey, Uncle Tony, hey.
So we get there, but we, you know, Nate was running behind. He was in a different Uber because he was doing some meet and greets. And then we all, the crew and some other comedians, we go over there and we realize they've let some other couple in.
Ugh.
So they're there having their, I don't know if it was a first date. It looked very auditiony. You
right.
know how, like, you can tell when somebody's like on their first or second or third date.
Right.
It's very like your real personality will not emerge for months.
Right.
It felt like that
to
me.
If not years for some of us.
It felt like that to me. It was a middle-aged man, middle-aged woman. And so they're talking it up. And then we come in with our table for 10. And there's nobody else in the restaurant. And he doesn't notice how weird this is. Like, the guy's just like, oh,
look at that.
Well, I thought we had the place to ourselves. Okay. Then he realizes he was at the show.
No.
So now
way.
It's worst case scenario because, again, I don't ever want to be whatever. And I don't think we should have a restaurant to ourselves. I'm not that guy.
No, I'm disgusted.
It's just he immediately starts in with, like, you know, people want to be funny themselves and he's trying to impress his date. And then he kind of goes back to talking to her. But I mean, literally, he's right to the next table. He's one table over.
Mm.
So we start talking about the Bills game because I'm listening to it. The last few plays, I'm like, we're listening to it in the Uber ride over on a little shuttle bus and a little Sprinter van. So we get there and it's like, they have a kick, you know, the Bills are going to kick the field goal to force overtime, you know, whatever.
He's never missed a kick in his life.
I mean, yeah,
I forgot what the guy said right before it.
Yeah, it's brutal. 41 yards or whatever.
Yeah.
And maybe even less. I can't remember what the kick was for.
I mean, I could have made the kick.
It was a chip shot.
I'm just kidding.
And so I find out at the table he's missed the kick. Because now it's Kansas City ball. I'm just looking at the play-by-play, like, on the app. I'm not listening to the game because I don't want to be rude and have the big, you know.
Sure.
So I go, he must have missed the kick because now it's Kansas City ball and it's still the same score. And so the table starts talking about, like, are you kidding me? Scott Norwood all over again. We're thinking about the 90s teams, the Bills teams that lost four Super Bowls in a row. And we're talking about it. And then the guy at the table who has kind of, like, kept to himself for the first, you know, 10 minutes of our interaction. Because he did when he first got, hey, great show. And then he realizes Nate's coming, but he didn't say anything about that. But then he heard us talking about the Bills, and he goes, hey, let me stop you. Like, he kind of interjects himself into our let me stop you if you're talking about the Bills. I recorded the game. Please don't. Do not ruin the game. Like, he gets very, like, whatever. Oh. And I go, So we're not allowed to talk about the Bills game.
He said this to strangers.
He did. And I thought to myself, he can't have overheard what we just said, because all we're talking about is Scott Norwood. We're talking about the Bills. You know, I talked about how when I was a kid, the thing I remember the most is David Letterman doing a monologue joke, Bills stands for Boy, I Love Losing Super Bowls. And so we're talking about the long-suffering history of that fan base and how they kind of choke and whatever
right. In
a big moment. And it's sad to me because they're such a great cold-weather town. They're long-suffering fans. I love the fan base. And I want them to win. I wanted them to win that game, but they've choked. We've said it over and over again at the table. And then this guy, hey, before you get going, just so you know. So now we have to just change the conversation.
Did you?
And again, we did.
So, but you weren't happy about it.
I'm letting this guy have it now. So if he's a listener.
What if he's now a listener? Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not saying the guy. It's just interesting, like, that you would do that to somebody you don't know. Hey, don't bring up the.
Yeah.
Like, you and I have a rule. We call it radio silence.
Right.
You'll text me, hey, I'm at a volleyball game. I'm not watching the Vols game. Do not text about it.
Maintain radio silence.
Maintain radio silence. I go, got it.
I text you and my father-in-law. Because you're the two.
Sometimes I'll send back a text like, oh, so you're not watching this crap? Like, I'll be like, we won't believe this. You know, I try to just throw you off the scent, you know, a little bit.
Well, my father.
Four fumbles in a row? Like, I can't. I'm just trying to get you to.
My father-in-law, we now have a very good understanding because there have been times.
Yeah.
Where I'd be like, by the way, today's his birthday. Happy birthday.
Oh, happy birthday, Johnny Canada.
And I would be like.
Which sounds like a superhero from Toronto.
He'd be like, hey, are you watching? I'm like, no, I've got it recorded. Watch later. He'd be like, well, look. I'm not going to tell you anything about it.
Yeah.
But I'll just say this. I'm like, no. He'll be like, no, I'm not going to tell you anything about it. I'm just going to say this. Like, no, I'm begging him. He's like, no, but I'll just say this. 30 points is a lot to come back from or whatever. Like,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
I didn't tell you the score. It's like, oh, come on, man.
I'm just telling you, if I was a Vol fan, I'd walk out in front of a bus. But you can watch the game if you want. You can do what you want.
How
listen,
it ended, I couldn't
how
believe.
You spend your day is up to you. I would find something else to do. Yeah, but it's just funny, like, the idea of, like, that personal. Like, I get sports fans are a little bit different anyway, and you just have a thing of, like, you know, you're a fanatic for your team, and you don't want somebody ruining the game for you. Everybody has those moments where you've taped the game, and then you hear something. Anyway, then he got a text from a friend.
Oh, so someone else ruined it.
Somebody, like, halfway through dinner, he goes, we can talk about it now. Somebody just texted me. They choked. And then he wanted to talk about it.
Yeah.
And
was he nice when he said it?
He wasn't super nice.
But is that?
I think he was coming on a little strong. He's just one of those, like, hey, I think he's from Buffalo, and he drove across the border to Toronto.
Well, then
to
you're saying he's an embattled fan base, so he maybe was coming. Maybe there's a little.
But I'm also saying he's like a brash New Yorker type.
Yeah.
Shout out to all of our New York listeners. For me, as a Southern person, I was like, okay, this guy's like interjecting himself into.
Where's your sweet tea?
And, exactly.
Yeah, you're.
I did a joke on stage in Toronto. By the way, it's the biggest crowd I've ever been in front of by three times. It was 16,000 people.
Holy cow.
In the round. So I'm having to learn to, I have to learn to, I told you this last episode, right, that I was going to have to learn to walk.
Yeah.
Because you can't just stand and deliver when people are in the round because you're in the center.
Right.
And your back is going to be to people who, there's screens above you in the cluster in the center. But a lot of, like a few thousand of these people are underneath this the cluster. They're really close to the stage.
Some might say they're beholding the cluster.
They are beholding the cluster.
Am I right?
So they're looking at you. They're not looking at, they can't see the screen. They're right underneath them. So.
Okay.
So you have to give them something to look at. So if you know what I mean. So I had this, I got a sachet Chante. And so I got to shake my moneymaker or whatever. I don't have a moneymaker.
I'm not making much money.
My moneymaker is the jokes.
That's funny.
But Nate's dad did a great joke because Nate's dad opened for him in Newark. And by the way, he's so fantastic.
Yeah.
Like, I cannot tell you how much he reminded me of Pastor Roy, our children's pastor.
Right, because they're both magicians.
They're both magicians, and they both do kind of these tricks that can go wrong, or they have like a message to them.
Uh-huh.
It felt, and he's so sweet. Like, what a sweet man.
Yeah.
And, but he was so funny, and he did this bit about how, like, he would talk about, he would pull somebody from the audience or talk to somebody in the audience, and he goes, how much did you pay for that seat? And he goes, I know what you paid. He goes, it's too much. He goes, you don't watch a comedy show. You listen to it. So you people in the back, you're doing it right. And then they'd all cheer. You know, he's just such a, it was just such a funny pander. He does this trick where he cuts rope. He goes, I saw this guy when I was a kid. Maybe I want to be a magician. He cut the rope once and he held the two pieces. Then he cut the rope later again. I go, those are fake scissors. There's no way he's really cutting it. But it was 8 pieces. By the time he goes, 8 pieces. He goes, and then by the end of it, he pulled that rope and it was all together and he pulls the thing and all the 8 pieces fall on the ground. He goes, I never learned how to do it. That guy was good. Y'all should have got him. Honestly, that guy, amazing. It's so funny and disarming and sweet. Yeah. And what a great guy. But anyway, that was a blast. But yeah, like you listen to a comedy show.
Yeah.
But you're also watching. And if you sit up close, you want it. So I was having to learn to turn and I'm just doing it. But I had a couple of Canada jokes that I, you know, did for the Toronto crowd.
Okay.
That I didn't do for the other crowds.
Okay.
One of them was that I'm from the South, just like Nathan from Tennessee. And I said, I think Canadians are honorary. You're like Southerners. You're the most like Southerners. And they kind of like were nonplussed by that. Like, what is he going to say? And I said, look, you have a weird accent and you are suspiciously polite and you put gravy on everything. That's Southern. You're Southern.
That's truth.
Yeah. Which it got a good laugh, which I was grateful for. Cause I was like, this is a risk. You know, this is like my opener thing, but they were so great. It's so strange hearing laughs come from around you three-dimensionally.
Right.
You're used to them coming from one direction or at a one direction show.
Yeah.
But no, you're there and it's like, it's such a weird feeling. And I did not like never got a comfort level of the walking.
I can't imagine that anyone would.
You're just like, is this too fast? Like, I kept thinking to myself, is this too much? Am I turning too quickly?
Yeah.
Because you walk in like a, there's an 8-foot by 8-foot box they want you to stay in. So that's when you're the most well lit for the cameras.
Yeah.
So to put you on the screens. And they go, if you get out of this box, you could lose you, especially a 6'4" guy like you, Johnny, your face will be dark. So don't walk out of this box. So I'm trying to stay in the box, but not at the ground.
Mm.
Keep my head up, but know where the box is. But also like, am I turning too fast? Should I walk on a punchline? You don't walk on a punchline.
Oh.
That's weird. And then there's cameras at the four corners. So you kind of want to deliver the punchline to a camera.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to.
That's just real. Yeah.
I'm not used to that timing going on in my head. I'm just used to the timing of the joke.
The joke.
Not the timing of moving with it.
You're not trying to stay in a box. You're trying to think outside the box.
Nate doesn't move a lot usually anyway either. And he said now that he's done a bunch of these, though, he's getting used to it. And he likes the challenge of like, now I'm going to mix it up and deliver to this. He says he likes it now. But I did not get used to it the whole weekend.
Wow.
So it's going to be a while before I get in the flow, I think. But I did well, and the shows were good. So
I'm glad. Listen, I've seen the show, and I've heard great things about all the others.
Yeah.
You know what else I heard great things about, Johnny?
What's that?
Our sponsors.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. We should take a moment and hear from a few of them. I think it was one of the best shows I've ever been to.
It's... Sorry. I got choked up. I get so excited.
I think
about
you're
it.
Right.
No, it's so tight now. His new hour. And of course, all the openers are, they all have an hour themselves.
Sure.
That they could do. They're all doing 10-minute spots or whatever, but everybody's such a pro, or they have TV spots or whatever. They're just great. So It's such a quality show. And then Nate's new hour, I think it's his best hour. Like, I think it's better than Hello World. I can't wait for people to see it. I think he records in April for Netflix. And it's going to be something.
Where will he
record? It's going to vault him to another stratosphere, I think. I think it's going to find him an even larger fan base because it's that good of an hour.
Yeah. No, it's very good. Well, where will he record?
I think that one's in Phoenix.
Phoenix.
Yeah. He's doing it at the Suns basketball arena.
Wow.
Two shows.
Wow.
That he'll do, and then he'll record. But yeah, it's by then, who knows? I mean, it's so tight now, and he's still adding and moving. He's moving things around, moving the pieces around. But even from when I did the show with him in Knoxville in December versus what we just did, it was a few weeks.
Yeah.
And he was still off. He was off one of those weeks or two of those weeks. So it's like, it's still getting better and tighter, and he's adding, and you just go, man, this guy, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. And it's so cool to be along for the ride, you know, and so I'm grateful to him. Although you heard from the last episode before I left for the road, I was getting sick.
Yeah.
And I was getting worried. They put me on steroids and all that. And I'm just like, okay, I knew, right, I wasn't contagious, but I was like, I don't love the idea of being on the road and sick. And
you'd be like Johnny on steroids.
Yeah, I was. I was Johnny on steroids. Yeah. And you're trying to be a good hang. And there's social media. Like, he has a guy that's his tour photographer and videographer that goes out with him.
Yeah.
And so they're constantly have a camera in your face and they're trying to get content of just hanging.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was a lot. But you're getting to do cool stuff. We played ice hockey.
Wow.
I don't play ice hockey.
No,
I've not been on skates three times my whole life.
How many times did you fall?
Let me tell you this. So we get out there and I'm like, all right, because they go, you don't have to put on skates if you don't want. But I was like, I'm going to do it because Nate didn't put on skates, by the way. He put on these like cleat things that are, they have a little grip,
okay,
spikies. And so you can stay up on the ice.
Yeah.
And then we started smacking pucks around. I'm like, well, I've never done this ever. So I'll try it. And this is probably day three or four of me being not feeling great.
Yeah.
And I'm like, so I started to like turn the corner a little bit. So I had some energy. I just sounded bad.
Yeah.
You know. And, you know, but I didn't feel fatigued as bad. But I'm like, I've not been on ice skates since like Obergatlinburg as a youth group member.
Right.
You know, or whatever. Or hanging out with the kids as a youth leader.
Yeah.
So I'm like, yeah, let's put these ankles on razor blades and see what happens. Let's just go out there and just wobble around. But I didn't want to be that guy. So I got put them on and I got going. And again, I don't look graceful on them, but I didn't fall.
Wow.
Did not fall until... So, like, we're finishing, and I was like, we're doing, like, three-on-three drills.
Did you have a helmet on?
No. And it could have gone so bad.
Oh, yeah.
You can get concussed.
Yeah.
You know, have to go home with a broken arm or whatever. Ice is not forgiving.
No.
You know, if you fall on that, and you're an old man, like, and I'm the oldest guy. I'm the senior member of that group, probably.
Oh.
Like,
yeah.
Nate's 44. I'm 49.
Ugh.
So, like, it's just,
years makes a big difference.
I'm a brittle old man.
Time bomb.
We're out there and, you know, it's fun. We're taking like shots all the way from the back corner of the ice. It's almost like shooting from, you know, the end line.
Yeah.
Kind of shoot up. We're just whipping and I keep thinking like, I'm going to swing this and it's going to like cause me to, the whiplash of that's going to make me fall. But it didn't. I kind of hung in there. But I look at the video because they took a ton of video. And
yeah.
I mean, I look so awkward. But I didn't fall. I'm just like, you try to get you keep regathering,
right,
you know. But then I thought, well, now I started skating around. I'm like, I can skate. Like, I'm not able to stop very well. It's like roller skating.
Do these have, like, the toe pick?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, okay.
These were like, if you wanted to be a good skater, you could do it with these. They had all the gear, but it's like, you got to know that. And you just can't, because it would just cause me, it would fling me forward and I'd just go head over heels. But so I didn't do that, but I just kind of let myself slow down. Then I would slowly turn and come back. But I could build up some speed to that thing where you shoom,
yeah,
shoom, shoom, shoom. And I was like, I just want to get it. I go, Mike's one of the other comics. I go, Mike, my friend Mike James, hey, take a video of me with my phone. I want it. This is the end. We're all done, basically. I was getting off the ice. Hey, take a video of me. I just want to get a thing of me going like one direction. Then I'm going to come back and I'm going to stop at the, you know, you're like, boom, you just stop yourself at the railing.
Uh-huh.
And I go, get a video of me coming at you full speed. He goes, cool, cool, cool. He took a video. I go, shoom, shoom, shoom. I come at him, stop. And then I go, whew. And then he kept filming as I go to get up. It's like, so I'm going to go get off the ice now.
Yeah.
And you know, when you go to get off the ice, there's that door and there's like, you have to step up.
Yeah.
Cause there's like a little door frame and I didn't do it. And I crumpled into a heap.
I have to see this video.
And literally, like, I folded myself, because you're now the skates don't work right. I'm folding over right. My ankle, and I just I bent so wrong that it pulled something in my back. Like, I felt something in my back pop, like, as I fell. And then I jump up and I'm like, okay. And then people run over, are you good? Like, the people that work at the, are you okay? We got one, you know, Code Blue or whatever. I jump up, you know, embarrassment, adrenaline. I'm like, I'm good.
On the inside.
I look up, Mike is still filming.
Yes,
and he's
Mike.
Laughing. He goes, are you good? I go, yeah. I go, did you film? He goes, oh, I got it all. So I'm going to post that today. I'm actually going to post that one on socials.
Yes, I can't wait.
Yeah, it was rough. And I'd gone all day without falling. I mean, it'd been like, you know, whatever, 45 minutes, but it was, I was proud of myself. And then all of a sudden it's like, nope, you're a mere mortal.
That's, Johnny, that's amazing. I love it.
Yeah.
Imagine what all we catch now. If me and in the old college days, could you imagine?
We would probably catch some cool stuff, but we'd catch a lot of like, oh, I'm an idiot.
Yeah.
And then you post it and you go, maybe I'll go viral and make a little money on this.
Yeah.
We could have supplemented your entire college experience with just some.
Well, I could have used.
Yeah. You could have used the help.
If nothing else, like Laura and I sat back last night and we remembered our first house that we bought in Marable.
Mm-hmm.
And we went through so, like, it was like, you know, EMDR in therapy, which I've never done, but it supposedly helps you unlock parts of your memories.
Yeah.
That you are
what
not.
What does it stand for?
EMDR is.
EMDR?
Yeah. It's an eye movement.
Okay.
So there's like a device with a light or something and you see it.
Right.
And I don't know what the.
This feels like new agey to me.
Well, I could just look it up.
Do whatever you want. But.
No, I mean, it's like a total.
But you don't think they're planting these memories?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
But EMDR therapy, Johnny, stands for.
Electronic.
Yeah.
Dysmorphic.
EMDR. Is it true? No.
Electronic,
it's
medical, dysmorphic, retinal.
Definition. It's got a. Wow. Can no one please just.
Would you? We need our Echo Dot in here. I need to bring the Echo Dot to the studio so that we can just be like, ask it things.
Eye movement, desensitization, and reprocessing.
Okay. That's what I was going to.
So I had the eye movement, right?
That would have been my guess.
I didn't know where the others. Anyway, we were just, it's amazing though.
The memories.
When we got into the memories,
yeah.
How many came, how many triggered other ones.
But you didn't use this, you just were talking amongst yourselves.
Just talking, but we drilled down, you know, and I just.
You don't have that divide, like Laura's not shining a light in your eyes. And
no.
Be like, tell me what you remember about the first house.
Tell me now.
What's your pen number?
Where are the documents?
Yeah.
But it's like how much of life we've forgotten.
Yeah.
Or we haven't forgotten, but you don't know that you don't think of. And that's why the videos, like Sadie's life, I go, other night, because my Google photos will back everything up, right?
Yeah, compared to your photos of you as a kid, there's so many thousands more.
I think I have 75,000
videos
and photos.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, somewhere in the cloud. I mean, 75,000.
Yeah.
And because I mean, often I'll take a picture, I'll take 10 to try to get the one good one or whatever.
And you don't delete the other 9 once you get the one, so they just stay.
I think it was Jesus that said,
oh, wow.
Where are the other 9?
Where are the other 9?
And so because
only
of that,
one leprous photo returned to say thank you.
Which I preached on that, by the way.
You did.
Someday. But I just think of like, what would we have captured?
Yeah.
You know, like I did the whole driver family history thing.
We lived it, John.
Yeah, we lived it.
It's like the country song. You should have seen it in color.
Yeah, but we forgot it.
Now, did we, though?
No, but we have to stop and really think.
Yeah, you have to make yourself
remember. Sandy can be like, you know, I have a video of that or whatever. If it's something significant.
But does that cheapen it, do you think?
Maybe.
I don't know.
Does it mess with your mental capacity?
Oh, I don't know.
Because I try to help my mind be sharper. You know what? The one thing I do to help my mind be sharper,
what's
Johnny.
That?
You know what it is?
Hold on. Juggle?
No.
Oh.
No, I'm horrible juggling.
Yeah.
Life and for real. No, it's whenever I have to request a code,
mm-hmm.
like a two-factor
two-factor authentication.
Thank you, authentication. Then I never copy and paste it. I try to memorize the number before it disappears from the text.
Oh, wow.
Because it comes up on my computer.
It's like a little
so I don't look at my
test
phone.
You give yourself.
Yeah, so if it comes up, it's usually 6 to 8 numbers.
Yeah.
I will look at it, and I know I have like 4 seconds before this little notification is going to go away.
Right.
And I do my best to memorize the number
you
and then go put it
pretend it's a missile code.
Right. And I have to know
turn
this
your
now.
Key at the same time
dude,
as
I could
Laura.
Be in the FBI. I could see the license plate.
That's all it takes to get in the FBI now.
That's what they say.
They say, hey, can you say the 6-digit number back real quick? And they go, you're in.
That's all you need.
Here's your dossier. Now get on this plane. And you're like, this feels really like y'all should have better. Okay.
Whatever.
They go, here's your badge.
Yeah. Right. They didn't even do a background check.
Off you go. That guy really knows numbers.
Hey, John, I think it's that time.
Oh, is it?
I think it's time for us to think through the thoughts of others.
Okay.
Reflect upon them. It's a little part of this podcast episode that I like to call They Talked About That. Johnny.
Wonderful.
British novelist E.M. Forster said, we must be willing to let go of the life we have planned so as to have the life that is waiting for us.
Yeah, that's good.
Like how much the plans, I have an expression I say to the church sometimes, and that's show me your expectations and I'll show you where you're disappointed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because expectation is, I think, the key. In fact, I think about this a lot.
Yeah.
As a dad, even. Like I keep rewriting this.
Like all the disappointments you have.
No.
Or based on your expectations.
All this
you know, as a dad.
No, I'm never disappointed in my kid. No, that's not what I mean. But like the she, though, at that age especially, it's they're not aware of what they were expecting this to be.
Yeah.
You know, so some things like the latest way I wrote this was prepare and pray for what might be.
Mm-hmm.
Hope and pray for what could be. Expect nothing but God's faithfulness, and then accept with grace and humility what is. Other ways I've said it, prepare for the worst, hope and pray for the best, expect nothing, and then accept what is. I mean, that's the simpler version. Like when you get to the point of what's the difference between when you can't differentiate your hopes and your expectations, that's where great disappointment. Especially if you had no preparation for what could go wrong.
Yeah.
So if you only thought, and most people don't go in, I think, to a situation thinking, oh, this is going to be perfect. Especially think about how much older we are now. We did this when we were in our band in college.
Mm-hmm.
We would go in and we expected the best. There wasn't like hoping for the best, but we didn't know we were expecting it.
Yeah.
But we were like, oh, this is going to go great.
Well, yeah, it's just like that roller coaster of, being on your expectations not being met, and then you rebuild them, and
and then when
you're disappointed again.
Yeah, how easily it gets dashed.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get dashed a few times, and then you, in some ways, you start expecting the worst, and that's not good either.
Yeah, but I agree with the quote. It's like, you got to live the life that you have.
Right.
You there's a time to push for a better life, but it's... Yeah, if you just are constantly thinking about what could be, it's such a trap, you know.
Yeah.
And you probably will catch yourself not living the life that you really have or not being grateful for what you have.
Yeah, our mutual friend Caleb Edwards has been on the podcast before.
Yes.
Talented songwriter, musician. We were talking about this week, and he said, he's like, you know, I think sometimes in life, it's like God spends all this time sharpening you into this certain kind of something for a very specific use, like he's forming you. And then it feels like just when you get to be exactly what you think he's been sharpening for, then he just takes you and puts you over here and hangs you on a nail and starts doing something else with you. And it feels very, we had this conversation, it feels almost wasteful sometimes when you follow, if you really follow the life that you have, not the one you think, well, I've been prepping or I've been. And that may not be what God at that, maybe he just wanted to sharpen you. It may not have been for the use that you thought it was going to be.
Right.
You know, and I, cause I'm, I really do believe what, who God is forming us into is more, is his greater goal or his only goal, really. I think he can accomplish all the purposes of things, but we're such a go do the life yeah. that you see in the future. And, you know, we were raised in that sort of time of sending kids in the mission field like crazy, trying to get them to commit to those things. And they're wonderful endeavors. We need those endeavors, but there was not that sense of,
like, God's trying to make you a servant. He's trying to make you like him versus God needs you or he can't accomplish these things.
Right. You're the hands and feet.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Which I agree, because the body has hands and feet, and that's the metaphor scripture yeah. uses.
And, but accomplishing those things, like you said, God could accomplish those things on his own. He's trying to form something in you while you accomplish those things. And if you're not looking at that, like, what am I becoming? Well, if it's all about just the tasks, look at all these tasks I accomplished for you, God. And it's not like, what did I become
right.
because of these tasks, you know?
Yeah. And you may not get the tasks that you wanted mm-hmm. or that you assumed or expected, right?
Yeah.
And that's the big can, you know, I don't know.
I don't want any tasks. How about that?
I think the greatness of contentment is found in, and this is something that when I did 12-step recovery, one of the major phrases that came out for me was the life I have right now is the one that God has given me.
Yeah.
It's a really hard truth to accept. Like the life I have right now, because I am so much into the life I've planned. Like that's why this quote speaks to me. But the one I have right now, if I believe, I think that's the big sort of contingency. If I believe all the other things I say I believe,
right.
then this must be the actual conclusion that aligns with my beliefs,
mm-hmm.
not the functional way that I live, which is, oh, the life I have now is always moving towards mm-hmm. the life I should have.
Or I should feel some level of discontentment because that's just part of that shows you care. Well, you can never be fully, you got to be growing every day towards something, or you're just like, that's the thing I think American hustle culture kind of did to us, where like, if you don't work an 80-hour week, what are you even doing, man?
Right.
You have to sacrifice something. And then you realize, well, people's families got sacrificed because of that stuff.
Right.
You know, and we gleefully threw ourselves into it. Well, this is just what it is, man. If you want to be the best, you got to be willing to stay late. Like the company's like, we're a family here. You're like, all right, you're about to get manipulated when they say that. You know what I mean?
Right.
We're all like a family here.
Right.
We need you to work Saturday.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, ugh. I just think there's a time, like there's a balance to that stuff where, yes, you should be always growing and pushing. But at the same time, man, there's a time to be like, wow, there's a contentment to be had. And I think that, I don't know, it feels like people are settling when they talk about contentment. And I think that's the Americanization of that word, or that, you know.
Oh, yeah.
If you see somebody content, you almost feel sorry for them. Like, he doesn't even know
right.
that he could have been great.
He could have really been
like,
somebody.
No, he's good. He's caught his limit.
Yeah.
He's fine.
Yeah, well,
we can't imagine a person being just fine.
No. Well, the scripture say? Contentment with godliness, godliness with contentment is great gain. And I think that we miss that. Like, that's the real riches. That's what great gain means. I mean, yeah. that... I think the older I get, the more I understand, oh, my bank account may not reflect
yeah.
what American society would say is a rich guy, right?
Well, that's the contentment, godliness with contentment is great gain. To me, it reminds me so much of the quote, I think it might have been C.S. Lewis that said, like, there's two ways to be rich. You can either acquire more or you can need less.
Yeah.
Like, I think people who need less have it. They figured something out.
Yeah.
Like, if you always have to acquire more to be happy, like, it never ends.
No.
When we know that with inflation, like, things are just, you know, going to go up.
Right.
You know, you could buy a car for $7,000 when I was a kid. Go try to find a $7,000 car now. Like, it's only going to go up, up, up. And so it's like, if you need to just acquire more to feel something,
mm-hmm.
you got to keep hitting that button.
Yeah.
You know, like a rat in a maze. Like, you got to keep the dopamine thing going or whatever you do. Like,
it's a poverty way of living.
Yeah.
You may not have poverty in your bank account,
yeah,
but it is a scarcity,
yeah,
because it's never enough.
So,
well, we solved that.
We did. We figured it out.
Yeah.
Thank you. It's a good quote. Good quote of the week there, John.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, I think something to be. I don't know. And again, as somebody who's trying to, like, I'm trying to. To me, I want to get the most I can out of the gifts I've been given, and so I never want to be like wasteful. As far as that, I'll go, well, this is enough. Well, what if God wants me to do this with that gift? Or am I supposed to be helping this many more people? Or How many events am I supposed to be doing a year? Should I do more fundraisers? Should I find the causes that I believe in and throw myself in? Should I have a foundation? Like, all that stuff are worthy things to think about. But, like, it's like when there was a guy who would mentor me coming up in comedy. And, you know, we do a lot of, I do a lot of churches. And so, like, he goes, like, you got to be careful with these churches. Because sometimes they will, they'll take it, they'll try to take advantage. They'll be like, they know that you have a ministry mindset sometimes. And they'll be like, well, this is what we have. And, like, we're a minister. And you're like, okay. And then this guy told me, he goes, somebody's going to pay. Like, either you're going to, like, my time away from my, either my family is going to pay.
Right.
Because they have to be away from me for the weekend. Or you're going to pay. You know what I mean? It's like, he's like, I don't like the idea that I have to apologize to somebody for what my services cost. Like, at some point you take less and you do things when you really believe in, you love, whatever. There's times and places to do that. Hey, I believe in this cause. This is the max budget they have. I do a ton of shows like that. But sometimes if you feel like, okay, there's a math in your head where you go, I have to be away from my, I have to make these sacrifices. So, like, somebody is paying, and I just think there's an offset to that stuff. I don't know. I'm saying it wrong, and somebody's going to think I'm all about the money, and that's not what I'm
sick of it.
John, I'm sorry.
I did share the scripture. I will close this section.
Okay.
This is such a good scripture for Sunday on this topic. First Timothy 6, 17 through 19. As for the rich in this present age, and I stopped and like, guys, you may not think you're rich, and maybe you're not. Maybe someone here, you're really struggling. But if we look at the way history and the world lives, most of us fall into this category, meaning that if I wanted to get anything from any restaurant around me today, three times I would go do it. Right. You know, like I wouldn't be able to not do it. It says, as for the rich in this present age, charge them not to be haughty, nor to set their hopes on the uncertainty of riches, but on God, who richly provides us with everything to enjoy. And it's a very invitational verse to me. Like, it's a very not like, don't be rich, you know, and I'm not saying you should be rich. I'm just saying he's going to look, if you find yourself in this situation, this is contentment as well. This is, he acknowledges this. Don't set your hopes in the uncertainty of it all. Set your hopes on God, because he richly actually provides for us for things to enjoy. To your point, if you're not enjoying your riches, then you're not, what's the point of having them? And he says, they are to do good, to be rich in good works, and to be generous and ready to share. Thus storing up treasure for themselves as a good foundation for the future. And this is the great part, so that they may take hold of that which is truly life. I mean, so great. 1 Timothy 6, 17 through 19. That's in some of my daily stuff. Like, hey, when I don't know what to do, to your point, a foundation, and we've probably said this before, when I first started writing, I was, and this is such a hubris in, to say this, but I was so afraid of becoming greedy if I made money off of writing that I was worried that I would become the wrong kind of guy. And so I made a vow. You were there, you know, to God that I would give away half of everything that I made as a writer.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, that way I tried to make a law for myself to keep myself from becoming someone. And I did that for about the first decade. I gave away half. And then when I really came into grace as a mindset, I felt the Lord really correct me on that. Like, hey, you made a vow that I didn't tell you to make, you know, and you're never going to vow or make a law that's going to change your heart. You're just going to have to live with me every day. That's how that happens. So I don't really desire your sacrifice. I desire your obedience. That's sort of how I felt. Like, how can you be obedient to this? But I think that the attitude is the part here, that they are good. You know, yes, they're to do good, to be rich in good works, and to be generous. Their generosity is a disposition, and ready. I'm ready to share, is what it says. And I love that idea of taking, because in doing that, no matter what my life is, I'm taking hold of that which is actual life. Like, I'm living life and not just watching life go by. So
I was bummed when you broke the vow, because the half was going to me.
Yeah. Well, you needed a lot of help.
you broke your vow. It's fine. John, speaking of the past, we weren't at all, but we were talking a little bit about, like, going back. If we had an EDMR, what was it? EDMR? Did I get it right?
EMDR.
If we had an EMDR right now, and I could shine a googly, I could make your eyes go googly, and I could be like, John, let's go back into the past. We would call that segment "Talk About Then." John, this week, 1932, the English statesman and future Prime Minister Winston Churchill is prescribed this by his doctor. Do you want to take a guess what it was?
Hold on.
He was on a lecture tour in the U.S. December of 1931 when he was hit by a car. He had stepped in front of a moving vehicle after forgetting that traffic drives on the right.
No.
So this is kind of a funny little whatever.
I want to guess it was heroin.
After recovering from the accident, he continued his lecture tour with his doctor giving him a prescription for alcohol to alleviate the pain. This is Prohibition era.
Alcohol?
So he needed a prescription for alcohol.
Well, he didn't need it in England.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. In England, he was a drinking guy. Everybody drank. And so when he gets here,
he has to get a prescription.
I wonder if he walked in front of that car. He's like, I need a drink.
I got to have a
scotch. I need a fender bender stat.
Did you know this story?
No, it's a great story.
I did not. This is amazing.
So this is what it said from the doctor's note. This is to certify that the post-accident convalescence of the Honorable Winston S. Churchill necessitates the use of alcoholic spirits, especially at mealtimes. The quantity is naturally indefinite, but the minimum requirements would be 250 cubic centimeters.
Wow.
This allowed him to circumvent the prohibition restrictions on alcohol consumption.
Cubic centimeters?
Yeah.
Is
that how we get a cc?
I thought
fluid. Is that a cc?
I don't
know. Is that what a cc, 2 cubic centimeters,
is?
No. That's what it is. That's what, when you say, like, I need 50 cc's of, he needed 250 cc's of alcohol. Stat!
cc in measurement stands for cubic centimeter.
Thank you. Had to be a heck of a lecture.
Wow.
After he gets a little soused and he just gets up there and he's just, another thing about the U.S.
That was not a...
Hit me again! Anyway. Sorry, that's how he sounds. He didn't have an English accent when he when he drank. A lot of people don't know that because it's not true.
Right.
John, this week, 1784, Benjamin Franklin writes a letter to his daughter expressing his staunch disapproval of the eagle as our national symbol.
Mm-hmm.
He thought the bald eagle was of bad moral character. Found the turkey a more respectable bird. This letter is bananas. It's a couple of paragraphs. I just want to read some excerpts from his letter. For my own part, I wish the bald eagle had not been chosen the representative of our country. He is a bird of bad moral character. He does not get his living honestly. You may have seen him perched on some dead tree near the river where, too lazy to fish for himself, he watches the labor of the fishing hawk. And when that diligent bird has at length taken a fish and is bearing it to his nest for the support of his mate and young ones, the bald eagle pursues him and takes it from him. With all this injustice, he is never in good case, but it's like he is like those among men who live by sharping and robbing. He is generally poor and often very lousy. Besides, he is a rank coward. The little kingbird, not bigger than a sparrow, attacks him boldly and drives him out of the district. He is therefore by no means a proper emblem for the brave and honest Cincinnati of America. Which Cincinnati of America? Does Cincinnati mean like beacon? Or he was using Cincinnati as a...
Anyway,
maybe this is a typo, but it says the honest Cincinnati of America, who have driven all the king birds from our country. So he's basically saying, like, he can be driven out easily by a smaller bird. He's a coward. We drove out, you know, we, you know, took what we thought was ours, blah, blah, blah. So this is the wrong emblem for us.
Wow.
I am on this account not displeased that the figure is not known as a bald eagle, but looks more like a turkey. For the truth, the turkey is in composition a much more respectable bird, and withal a true original native of America. He is, besides, though a little vain and silly, a bird of courage, and would not hesitate to attack a grenadier of the British Guards who should presume to invade his farmyard with a red coat on.
Wow.
So he's acting like this turkey would be so brave.
Well, maybe
he would attack the British.
I mean,
if British attack a farm, they're going to be like, get him.
Wow.
So many times I've been attacked by turkeys, so I can tell you that Franklin was spot on.
He was spot on. By the way, Lucius Quincitus Cincinnatus,
okay.
5 BC.
Yeah.
Roman hero who saved the city from crisis and then retired to his farm rather than rule.
Okay, so that's where he's thinking we're of a, yeah.
I'm going to guess that's where that
so
came
to
from.
Say he were a Cincinnati is like a high praise.
Right.
He's we're like a city on a hill.
Roman hero who refused. Well, again, he would fight, save everyone, and then not take the loot for himself, but give up power.
Yeah.
Just like the turkey.
John, born this week, 1961, the great one. Do you know what I'm talking about?
1961?
When I say the great one, who do you think the great one is?
Wayne Gretzky.
Wayne Gretzky, yeah. The all-time leader in scoring, 2,328, and assists, 1,563. And he's won the MVP award a record 9 times.
Wow.
Wayne Gretzky.
I've only won it 7.
I'll tell you from my experience, like just being on skates and trying not to die was crazy. And not to embarrass myself in front of other grown men. That was one thing.
A mission accomplished, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Then put a stick in my hand, then say, shoot this rubber thing at a net.
Right.
Now try to stop another guy from doing it.
Right.
Now do it backwards. Now make sudden movements.
While they're trying to fight you openly.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, it's when you see skating, when you see ice hockey, it really is. They are some of the best athletes. It's insane the stuff they can do.
Yeah.
And they can make that thing dance, and it's crazy.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's very violent too. And that's our favorite part.
It is.
Wayne Gretzky, happy birthday. Finally, John, born this week, 1832. Author Lewis Carroll. Do you know what he's famous for?
Lewis Carroll. 1832?
Let me tell you a story, John. English mathematician and author Lewis Carroll, while on a rowboat to a picnic with his 10-year-old daughter, Alice, she asked him to tell her and her sisters a story. He spun
Alice
the story
Wonderland.
Of a girl named Alice and her adventures when she fell down a rabbit hole. So he came up with this in a rowboat. That's why I wanted to share this one, because I was like, this is some John stuff right here.
You think I could come
where
up
with that? I just think you would try.
Let's see.
It just seems like the girls would be, you know, Sadie and her friends would be like, I don't know if they would anymore.
No.
They'll have phones. They wouldn't be tell us a story.
Right.
But let's imagine.
I mean, look at this story.
Let's imagine there's any purity at all left in this culture. And they'd be like,
right.
Tell us a story, Papa. And he'd be like, all right. And then he just spun this story out of nothing. And of course, it's a classic. He then turned it into his most famous book, Alice's Adventures in Wonderland, 1865. So he was born in 1832. I wonder when that rowboat would have been. When that rowboat ride. I wonder how long it was before he kind of made it. But I was like, this, I got something here.
Alice in Wonderland, there's a lot.
Yeah.
Like, it's very imaginative, especially for the time.
It's a trip.
Yeah, it's like,
and it's got darkness to it.
Yes.
It's got, you know, the queen is insane and off with his head, the Mad Hatter. It's
maybe it has like this Brothers Grimm kind of influence going on, because, you know, back then you're...
Well, it got really embraced in the 60s and 70s because, like, drug culture, like, loved the idea, like, eat this one, it makes you smaller. You know, so
right.
You see a lot of, like, trippiness interpretations of Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah.
Like the Tim Burton, obviously. I mean, it's just created the colors and all of it. But, yeah, it's... anyway, it was all from a rowboat ride.
Wow.
You know,
that's
you never
a long
know.
Ride.
You never know when it's... Yeah, it's true.
He was going across...
Maybe that was just, like, the short... And then he's like,
the Atlantic.
Well, I'll tell you the rest later. Yeah, I'll give you the rest later. But
Tony, there was no rowboat. And that's the moral of the story.
Yeah. He was the Mad Hatter.
This is not a fictional story, so...
I didn't know that Alice was his real daughter, so that's kind of...
Wow.
That's kind of cool.
It's kind of like Wendy's.
Mm-hmm.
People are just naming stuff after people.
I thought you meant Wendy from Peter Pan.
I meant
which
Wendy's,
I think
the
Wendy
restaurant.
I think Wendy was a real person, too.
Really?
I think so.
No, there's no way to know. We've looked up more stuff today than we normally do.
That's true. We're doing the work over here, people. I don't know what you want from us.
Really fast in these Google searches.
Yeah.
Hey, Johnny, speaking of going to the web, though.
If you want to go to do a Google search, look for talkaboutthatpodcast.com, where you can see all of our archived episodes. Over 200, almost 300 now.
Yeah, it's getting real close.
And you can click the upper right link. That's how you support the show. Get ad-free content. That lower right link, you can send us a note. Which people have been.
We've been getting a lot of cool notes from you guys. We appreciate that.
Yeah, people are very encouraging for the most part. And the ones that aren't, you know what? They go straight to our trash folder.
Yeah, yeah.
We know how to hit delete.
I mean, we talk about living in a place where you can take criticism on this podcast,
yes.
But we're not going to do it.
No.
Not like as a podcast.
But I think admitting our hypocrisy makes us authentic.
That's what it was, yeah. I'm not living up to the standard, but it's saying that we're not living up to it. We're creating another standard.
I told you who I was.
Yeah.
The whole time.
Should have believed me.
This guy.
You should check out, if you want to know who Johnny is for real, though, Johnny W, J-O-N-N-I-E.
Well, if you want to know the curated online image of Johnny.
No, this is all
this is more the real me.
Mm-mm.
New clips coming out every week and tour dates.
Yeah.
Still dropping. I don't know when this will come out, but I'm in Dallas this weekend for a one-nighter at a church, and I'm very excited. Treach United Methodist Church in Flower Mound, scenic Flower Mound, Texas, near Dallas area.
Flower Mound sounds like an amazing place. Just mounds of flowers.
Mounds of flowers. I don't know that there's a lot of flowers. It's kind of a deserty area up there.
Those are mounds.
Yeah.
Maybe someone planted on them.
Some of the cactuses flower.
Desert. Yeah, it's a desert flower.
They bloom.
Yeah. They used to call me Desert Flower in college, actually.
That's weird.
No. No one ever called me that.
John, the old desert flower from parts unknown. Then you'd come in wearing a mask. Who was your tag team partner again? I can't remember. Anyway.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'll be doing that. And I have other shows coming up. Man, so much going on.
I've got
some more tour dates with Nate coming up. I'm doing a marriage cruise.
Oh, another one.
Which I think you can still get on that. I think it's it's last minute.
You're doing that with some friends of mine.
Oh, right. Ted Cunningham. Some friends.
Yeah, David Ann Wilson.
Oh, David Ann Wilson, who you wrote a book with.
I'm working on their third book right now.
Vertical
Marriage was their
vertical
first.
Marriage, yeah, Vertical Parents.
The second was No Perfect Parents.
Oh.
And
Diagonal Marriage.
Yeah. They're great people.
How to Be the Bishop You Know How to Be. That's Diagonal, because
you need to go meet them on the cruise.
I'm going to. You know who else? Natalie Grant is on that.
Oh, wow.
Ship. I've never worked with her. Great Christian artist. Selah. Remember that group?
I do.
They're doing worship on the boat.
Yeah.
So that'll be fun. I get to meet them. And hopefully I'll get to enjoy some. We're going to the Caymans.
Oh.
We're going to Jamaica.
Oh.
It's going to be warmer there, John.
Yeah.
Wish you were stowing away. You can get in the suitcase.
Oh.
I got a big suitcase.
It would have been.
You got a little bit of time to slim down. Get in that suitcase.
Just a little bit.
You need to cut some carbs. You had a little pancakes today.
I ate some of the pancakes. I ate a lot of the pancakes.
You ate a good 2/3 of those pancakes.
No.
Yeah. When she took it away, it was basically the outer rim, and I was like, what are you doing? Just eat the rest of it. Who are you kidding?
Since the Snowmageddon.
Yeah.
You can't eat good during the
snow. You can't blame the snow.
When you're snowed in, what are you going to do? Sit here and no.
Yeah, you're trapped.
It's not good. So,
boy.
But you know what, listener? You're not trapped. And we appreciate the fact that you come by your own volition to listen to this podcast every week. It means a lot to us. And so, Johnny, I think we should do it again next week. I'll
talk about that.
What do you do when the world around you is falling apart? It's amazing to me how many people are breathing air. They're going about their business and doing the things you're supposed to do. But if you really ask them, they know that on the inside, they are spiritually and emotionally and relationally dead. If we're not careful, all of us can experience that death. When what we need to do, even as the world around us is falling apart, we need to learn how to march when it would be easier to stay where we are and die. Join me each week on the March or Die Show as we discuss that and so much more.